Chapter 14. 30th Winter March. Sunlight peeked through the cloud cover for almost a full 2 minutes this afternoon, and I nearly took flight from joy. I've been reading Art and Shame, Forbidden Wonders of Faith, by Voisin de Petit Frère, and apart from the forbidden wonder of Voisin's name, I am vastly intrigued by the asides she keeps adding in the margins of the more controversial pieces. One of them talks about how she believes the absence of clear power always leads to the worst person possible seizing it, and I couldn't help but think about Kirkwall. The Viscount's seat has been empty almost 3 years now. There are more Templars than city guard on the streets these days, and Aveline says Meredith's officers keep coming to her demanding she account for herself whenever she makes a decision that doesn't involve them. She's refused so far. She says she won't ever turn over the city's authority to what ought to be a gallows-restricted arm of the Chantry, no matter how much they press. But Donnick looks uneasy when she says so. Well, it's not... I was going to say it's not any of my business, but somehow it feels like everyone will be caught up in it, whether they like it or not. Elthina would prefer not, according to Sebastian. But I think she thinks Meredith and Orsino are more reasonable than history has shown me. Well, I shall remain optimistic. Until the city starts coming down around us, anyway. And then I shall take my dog and my favorite blanket and flee into the hinterlands to live as a hermit for the rest of my days, eating rabbits and the moss that grows on trees and shaking my staff at passerby. 13th Guardian. Shocking cold front came through last night. All the world's icy glass. Very pretty and violently annoying, especially when one's great hall holds heat as well as a linen dropcloth. Was at Elegance today for tea, and Tomwise came. It was the first time she and he and Worthy and I had been in the same place since before I moved to Hightown. Had a marvelous time reminiscing about simpler, poorer, years, and then Elegance's husband came in to say hello and we all went prim as roses. He knows, I think, but he's awfully dour about questionable legality, so she's asked us to avoid the more overtly murderous stories when he's around. Reminds me of Stinton, to be quite honest, with the difference that Elegant seems to genuinely like her husband. Curious. Tomwise did say business has been worryingly good lately. He said the coterie's been ordering poisons in bulk, that everyone seems to be feeling the tension lately. Not much any of us can do for it from Elegant's tea room. Oh, and Elegant told me Aveline's not the only one with chantry bells ringing. Jewel and Pellery are getting married in the summer. I'm to be invited over Lady Ashbridge's objections, as I'm the one who introduced them. I'm so glad for them. And if nothing else, they'll be able to get away from their mothers now. Good for them. Make or keep them in health and happiness. At least until they've managed their own place. 19th Guardian. Not quite as cold, but brisk is the most generous of interpretations. Rarely does a trip to the market leave me quite so wrung. Then again, rarely do I eavesdrop quite as blatantly as I did. I'm normally much more surreptitious, so perhaps it's what I deserved. I wanted some sweets. There's a chocolatier beside Jean-Luc's who makes the most amazing honeyed almonds and nut brittle, and I thought it might be a nice surprise tomorrow at cards. Meryl's been bringing the sweet desserty liqueur along lately, and it seemed like it would match well. I also managed to find the owner of that little carved figurine with Bright Heart engraved on the bottom. Turns out it belonged to a little girl who lives just down the road from Jean-Luc, a gift from her father for her 7th birthday. It had fallen out of her bag, and he'd taken her all over the city without luck. Glad I could find that one's home again. Anyway, after I finished off the first bag of almonds myself, and had to go back for a second to actually bring to WG, I was walking back through the Hightown Market and happened to glimpse Arana standing at a stall I didn't recognize, one of the new ones that came in with that Orlesian caravan last month. It was covered in fancy silks, and the trader wore a silk half-mask lined in jewels. I wish I were joking. And considering I strongly doubt an Orlesian would be caught dead in paste rubies, that mask was almost certainly worth more than my entire wardrobe. She was asking about a pipe. I knew why the moment I saw it. It's perfect for Bowden. He's been looking for something like it for years, as long as I've known him. It was made of meerschaum and had a lovely, intricate geometric pattern carved into it. Very beautiful and very dwarvish. And very expensive, which is why the merchant wore a sneer so enormous it knocked his mask askew. I tell you, Journal, I was ready to storm him like the Black City. I was halfway across the square when I saw Arana draw herself up in that way that usually means I'm about to be crushed like a beetle. So I stopped and ducked in the most awkward fashion behind Hubert's stand so she wouldn't notice. Arana's trade is very good. I forget how good, sometimes, aside from the occasional odd sentence structure, because she hardly has any accent. That changed for this merchant. She went full Tevinter on him, cold as ice, her accent thickening with all those heavy vowels that could make anyone sound noble, even a slight elf of barely 20. And even though she didn't raise her voice in the slightest, she made it perfectly clear that her patronage was an honor to him instead of the other way around, that everyone in this city knew who she was and in whose household she served, and that if he didn't improve his demeanor immediately, he'd find his tariffs of import abruptly so high he'd have to forego the feed for his mule and pull his silken cart himself. Flames, but he went white! Gave her mighty discount, too, and flinched when she scattered the coins in his stand instead of handing them to him directly, as if she couldn't bear to touch him. I didn't even know her face was capable of haughty. Hot? I didn't know what to make of it. I'd half a mind to go after her and make sure she was all right, if nothing else. But then who should come around the corner but Fenris? And when Arana saw him, she went straight up and said something in Tevin I couldn't follow. He looked concerned, but not unduly so, and said something back in the same language, and then he turned and went with her back up the stairs toward the Amel estate and out of sight. I've been thinking about it all day. Did she learn that behavior from Hadriana? She must have. I can't imagine someone as gentle as she says her father was teaching her such things. It was certainly effective in putting that snide little man in his place, but surely it must rankle to have to pull in lessons learned during slavery when you thought you were free. Learn from someone infinitely cruel, who taught only by example on you and the ones you loved. Or is it worth it? If the payoff is forcing someone to respect you at last, when no one ever has before, when no one ever thought they should. I wondered if Daenerys... The last few words are scratched out. I think Meryl would say everyone ought to respect everyone else just because they're people. I wish someone had taught the Orlesian merchant that lesson. I asked Varric to temporarily misplace some of his paperwork on the way out, though, just out of spite. 25th Guardian. Drizzly. Chilly. Fenris said Arana was a little shaken, but otherwise all right. She hadn't meant to make a scene, but his mask had reminded her of a man who used to attend Hadriana's parties who made the slaves' lives miserable, and she grew so angry she had to stand up for herself. And by proxy for them. She hadn't thought it would work quite so well, and was a little afraid he'd come after her, which is why she'd asked Fenris to help her get home. He didn't elaborate further, and I didn't ask. Even I can tell when there are parts of a story I'm not meant to hear. I will say Bodin adores the pipe, and Arana looked so proud she gave it to him that it all seemed worth it. I suppose that's for her to decide, not me. I'd still very much like to give that fellow a knock right over the Hightown wall. Ninth Draconis. I hate Draconis. What a miserable month. Letter from Carver today I'll tuck in for safekeeping later. He reminded me of how he and Bethany used to talk in their own language and make me so angry at being left out. For whatever reason, they'd slowly stopped using it as they grew up. And I'd forgotten all about it. Apparently there's a set of twin sisters, one of the warden units, and they can read each other so well they don't even have to speak. I wonder if they have a sister at home waiting for their letters, too. 14th Draconis. Toby took two steps out the back door this morning and immediately came back in, soaking wet and exceedingly indignant. Spent most of the morning's trip out to the coast wondering why Fenris's scarf looked so familiar. I'd forgotten it's the one I'd given him two Saturnalias ago. Oops. At least it looks very warm. Came home in time to hear Arana reading off a shopping list to Bodin, and had the realization 3 damned years late that for all the time I spent teaching Fenris to read, it never one flaming time occurred to me to ask if Arana could. Bodin said her father had taught her a handful of letters in secret, and Bodin himself had taught her the rest, a few months after she'd arrived. He didn't mention it because it was right after Mother had died and he'd thought I had enough on my plate. Not too much for that, though. I wish he'd told me. I wish it had occurred to me any moment before today. He said she had been a very quick study, but hadn't wanted me to know. In case I'd been angry, she'd learned. Then she'd grown to understand us all better, but by that time it hardly seemed worth bringing up because everyone around her was reading, anyway. Damn. Damn. 25th Draconis. Almost comfortable outside, which is saying a great deal. Got Arana a little journal. I haven't the faintest idea if she'll use it, but burn me at the pyre if she doesn't at least have the chance. Had such vivid dreams of Fenris last night, I was quietly panicking about desire demons all morning, but Meryl says she's not noticed anything lately. That could be because she's been so deep in the mirror issue she hasn't seen daylight in weeks, but who am I to break mirrors, no matter how much I might wish to. In other news, Aveline marries in just under 6 weeks. Had Sebastian and me over yesterday to help her with a few details, since Sebastian has an in with the Chantry and I have exquisitely fine taste. And the willingness to carry things from room to room, which I suspect is more the purpose Aveline wished. She says Donnick intends to ask Fenris to stand up with him, and she wanted to be sure I was all right, since I'm standing up with Aveline. Of course, said I, almost entirely meaning it, but it was at least enough to convince her to drop the subject. I made her show me her gown at the end. White and gold, and Meryl's going to make her a crown of marigolds for her hair. She'll be beautiful. Is, too, but when they open those doors, Donnick will see the light of the Maker coming to meet him. Aveline told me, very gruffly, that she sent an invitation to Isabella's last known location, but hadn't heard anything in return. She knows as well as I do not to expect anything from that quarter. If 3 years without my scintillating company hasn't brought the pirate wench home again, Aveline's wedding hardly will either. I know very well that the only reason I'm so bitter is that I miss her dreadfully. How tedious, to be so aware of one's faults and too stubborn to do a single thing to rectify them. 19th Cloud Reach. The sun shone today so brightly the sea nearly looked warm. Drowning in wedding preparations. Should I ever marry, I will stand before a Chantry Mother with no one else present and not an ounce of cake. I'm not even sure I'll allow my spouse to be to attend. 25th Cloud Reach. Went out without a coat or scarf today and skipped across Hightown at how light it felt. Anders has been rather withdrawn lately, so I went to Darktown this morning to help him out at the clinic. Had made up some potions and poultices from the cache of elf root we found rooting out those slavers last month, and I thought that'd be enough to please him. Instead, he looked hollow-eyed and thin as paper, and barely said thank you before asking me to help him dig through sewer waste. He looked as bitter as he did during that whole mess with Ulrich a few years ago, down in the tunnels beneath the city. There weren't even any innocent girls to nearly kill this time, so I haven't any idea why he's so faint. He did say there had been unfortunate circumstances regarding certain underground factions. He wouldn't tell me anything else. That man used to trust me once. 30th Cloud Reach. Promise of clear warmth on the horizon. It better follow through, too, or I'm taking it straight to Andraste. Night before summer day, and the night before Aveline's wedding. She's staying here at the estate tonight, so we can all help her get ready tomorrow. It'd have been a shorter walk to the Chantry from the barracks, but she'd have also had to walk through the barracks in her wedding dress, and even now I think there's some things she'd like to keep private, even if she does look splendid in that gown. We hosted a small dinner for her and Donnick tonight. The big wedding feast will be tomorrow, but this was just for us and two of Donnick's brothers. Anders came. I doubted, but he did. And Meryl, and Sebastian, and Fenris, and Varric, and everyone was so civil to each other, nearly fainted from the shock. One of Donnick's brothers also asked to take me to dinner sometime, which is very funny. Not at the time. I know my eyes flickered a bit helplessly between all involved and utterly oblivious parties scattered across the room. And then I shrugged and said I was complicatedly in love with someone who either complicatedly returned the sentiment or just deeply enjoyed stringing me along, but I'd look him up should it ever fall through. He laughed and thanked me for my honesty and brought me another glass of wine to drown my sorrows. I asked Aveline, later, how she was feeling. Bittersweet, she said. She had been thinking of Wesley a great deal, and wondering about Donick's parents, and daydreaming about how their lives might change over the next few years. She said she'd worried about falling in love again, once upon a time, until my mother had sat her down and talked the sense right into her again. She'd told her hearts always found a little room to grow, no matter the scars, and that happiness could sometimes be all the sweeter for the grief that came before. I will say only it had better not show the slightest peep of a cloud tomorrow. After everything else, she deserves to have decent weather on her wedding day. First blooming tide. Summer day. Clear as a glass and warm and beautiful in every way. Thank you, Andraste, for your kindness. I'm blowing you dozens of kisses. They are married! Beautiful weather and a beautiful ceremony. As I thought, Donick nearly toppled over as he and Aveline came out of the doors towards each other, and he tripped twice, walking her down the aisle toward the chantry mother. Meryl's marigolds shone in the sun like little suns of their own. She'd done a circlet of sorts that trailed down in the back and wove through Aveline's hair, which was loose for the first time in my memory and softened her so much I should hardly have recognized her if I hadn't been the one helping her to do it. Donick looked marvelous, too. He wore a simple brown suit and a white vest with just a trim of gold around the buttons. A sound decision, given he's so steadfast and calm, and leagues better than the flashy embroidery nonsense all over the last society wedding I attended with Mother. Not that I think he could see a thing aside from Aveline's face the whole hour the Mother spoke, anyway. Fenris and I were right behind them, and I'm delighted to report, journal, that I was so preoccupied with my overweening gladness for Aveline that I handled myself with more aplomb than I've ever managed in my life. He wore the same coat he did the night he came to the champion's ball for me, and I must say it looked sharp as a knife next to my own dark yellow gown. Less fine than Aveline's, naturally, but it was kinder to me than some shades she nearly chose. I will also say I was very, very pleased at the attendance. More of the guards came than I expected, and all our friends, of course, and Donick's enormous family. But so, too, came quite a few friends of both Aveline and Donick I hardly knew aside from the faces. We didn't quite fill the chantry, but it was awfully close, and anyway, they all looked glad enough for the two of them, I was satisfied. The feast after was enormous and had excellent wine. Varric found some artisan pâtissier straight from the Winter Palace, who was the direct cause of my pants not fitting tonight, and between the glorious Ferelden-style flat cake and the three-tiered champagne glass tower, it's a wonder anyone will be able to roll out of bed tomorrow. Aveline and Donick are away tomorrow morning for a honeymoon in Orlais. No one will say precisely where, though I'm certain Varric knows, and for once I'm glad she'll be away so long. We've all promised to keep an eye on the guard in her absence, just in case the Templars begin edging in somewhere they shouldn't. Not, in retrospect, that I'll likely be able to do much, but a promise is a promise. He played Ferelden fiddle songs once everyone was deep enough in their cups to dance without worrying about what their neighbors might think. I haven't danced the River Dane's line since Lothering, though more people knew it than I'd thought, and then they played Those Sweet Brown Eyes, oh, and before I could help it I looked over and saw Fenris across the room looking back at me. It was the same tune we danced to 100 years ago at the Hanged Man for Saturnalia, when Mother was still alive, and I was wondering if we'd ever be friends again. He smiled when he saw me. Neither of us danced. The whole room was between us, and by the time I'd have reached him, the squares would have been set. But I could see the memory was as plain for him as it was for me, and as pleasant. He did come over after and compliment both my dress and the decorations, part of my wedding present. This time I had the presence of mind to admire his coat and candlelight, instead of the shadows behind shrubbery, and it looked just as good on him as I'd thought. It has just the barest lining of gold thread at the sleeve cuffs and the trim of the wide belt, and he wears it so very well. One final note, and then I must sleep. Towards the end of our conversation, Donick's brother, the middle one, who asked me to dinner the other week, came up and joined us in the conversation. He said nothing overt, and was as pleasant throughout as any family of Donick's ought to be, but at the end he bowed over my hand and told Fenris that should he ever cede the war, he'd be happy to take up the colors in his place. Fenris looked confused long enough for me to stumble over some nonsense explanation as Donick's brother left, but I'm certain he put it together soon enough. One day I should like to meet someone who declines to heckle me to my face. It was a beautiful wedding.